the defendants come in with an affirmative defense and say, we're going to challenge standing, and then they expressly let that go, the joint final pretrial report, not only signing off on a joint statement and summary of the case that says Quad has an assignment, but also a reading to the jury that we cited in our briefing that said Quad is here standing in the place of Open First. The entire back and forth that Mr. Hanrahan was doing with you before I took the podium was an argument on how to interpret that statement, those provisions, differently than Judge Stadmuller.
Counsel, this is Judge Kenney again. Did any of the instructions touch on this issue?
No, Your Honor, other than in the jury instructions, and it's page 11 of the jury instructions, there's a statement in there to the jury that Quad, and I'm not getting my verbiage exactly right here, is standing in the place of Open First. Judge Stadmuller, whether anyone here agrees with him or not, obviously we do, was well within his discretion to conclude, as the district court concluded in the C case, S-I-H, and as this court affirmed in that case, to say, I am not going to allow this game of got you after the fact. As in C, the parties in the court, the adverse parties, were led to believe one thing by the pretrial filing, and Judge Stadmuller had the discretion to hold them to that representation, them being the defendants who made it. Now, as far as the Rule 50 issue and the right to cure, we in fact offered that to Judge Stadmuller after the jury verdict. The way Judge Stadmuller asked us to do our Rule 50 motions was to put them on the record, save our argument for after, let the jury decide. That's in the transcript. We did that. When 1-2-1 re-upped this motion or argued it for the first time, when Judge Stadmuller asked them to do that, in our briefing, post-trial briefing, you will see that we said, if you disagree with the interpretation of the pretrial report, then we need to have the right to cure this. Because the federal rules, Rule 50 specifically, doesn't sanction this game of gotcha either. So in sum, on the standing issue, it really is a non-issue. It's an abuse of discretion review. Judge Stadmuller was well within his rights to interpret the pretrial report the way he did. And it would not only be wholly unfair, but wholly inconsistent with the federal rules to reverse him and dismiss the entirety of this jury trial and all the time and expense and the justice that was rendered at the end without giving Quad the right to cure it, which frankly is even unnecessary given what Judge Stadmuller held about his own pretrial submissions. And let me just say one more thing. That applied both ways. We had a section, we being the plaintiff, Quad Graphics, had a Wisconsin statute section 100.18 claim alleged in the complaint. You won't see it in the pretrial report. I can't show up and do anything with that anymore. The very purpose of the pretrial report was to narrow the issues for trial, one of which, do we have to spend time putting on the evidence of the assignment, or can we agree to that? Judge Stadmuller held that's what was agreed to. The remainder of the appeal filed by Mr. Hanrahan's clients, who I'll call the appellants, I know there's a cross appeal here, is nothing more than an invasion of the province of the jury. And Your Honor said it correctly when you said this is a fairly complicated business transaction. And it was. If there were one single governing document for this entire thing, then maybe we don't have a two-week jury trial. But the reality is, when Mr. Hanrahan says, let's get into the facts, that's exactly what you'd have to do to sort out what happened here, who promised what, who breached what, and how people were damaged. At trial, and I point specifically to the closing argument, the rebuttal, closing argument, we made clear the jury was presented with two very different versions of the universe. One was Mr. Heverly and One-to-One's contention that there was actually a two-company proposition offered to these customers, and that Open First was a simple subcontractor of services to One-to-One and Mr. Heverly, to which they owed no legal or contractual duties. And then they spent a large chunk of time putting on all the evidence they could pull out and feed into that theory. The second theory, which we advanced, was no, there was not. There was one singular entity located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with an Open First Communications, Inc. division. And if you read the cross-examination of Mr. Lewis from PennCorp, that becomes crystal clear. In any event, we pulled out our nuggets of fact and put those into our bucket, and then we put those two versions of the universe in front of the jury. An intensely factual exercise. And the jury came out in our favor. On this record, there is really no basis for the Court of Appeals to invade that jury determination. Because there is, as Your Honor pointed out, may have pointed out, no one global document, no simple interpretation of a provision that's so clear on its face, it defines what everyone was doing here. And the jury concluded, and we believe correctly, that based on Mr. Heverly's own representations that he was an agent, based on the email exhibit amongst people in his own company with an organizational chart for Open First that has, and I quote, Heverly and agents in the chart down at the bottom in the flow of command.
There was a point in time when there was an acquisition and someone did due diligence, and then there's something that comes out of there and say, hey, wait a minute, who's who, and that sort of thing. It seems to me then what Quad did, it got more, I don't know, then knew what was going on. Is there a time when Quad discovered what was going on and said, wow, this guy is double-teaming us, he's skimming or doing whatever word we want to put on it. And then they continued doing business under some, I guess, continued relationship. Is that, what was really, why did Quad continue even transacting with him and continuing to, I don't know what, treat him as something, because he was a pretty good salesman apparently.
Surely.
In many more ways than one.
Surely. Let me, it depends what you mean by what was going on. In terms of the discovery of what Mr. Heverly...
What I mean is that if this was done without Quad's knowledge, that he was double-teaming or doing whatever you want to call it, and then there was a discovery of that what he was doing, and I thought they continued doing business in some arrangement. Is that right or wrong?
No. The discovery, Judge, of what Mr. Heverly was up to, and this actually, if you look at the opening statements, is how the whole case opened up, was a phone call in early February of 2007, where one of Open First's employees got a phone call from Time Warner in the Carolinas following up on a product and was confused by why he got the phone call, because Open First had been told they'd lost that business.
So when they got that call, then they assumed, well, that's a former customer. What's he calling us for? Is that kind of the way it went?
What happened is Mr. Olszewski, you'll see in the record, who's an Open First employee, goes to Mr. Kraft and says, what is going on? Why is this guy calling us about a product that we don't have, and why does he think he's doing business with us? That leads to actually a very short investigation, which leads to a termination letter on March 1, 2007. That's less than a month. Albeit the March 1 was a 30-day notice termination, but it's not as if, Your Honor, there's anything in the record that Quad discovered that Mr. Heverly was double-teaming, to use your words, and then continued doing business down the line.
Okay, I misunderstood that.
No, that's okay. As Mr. Hanrahan indicated, and I agree, this is an intensely factual case.
This is Judge Kenny again. Who was the termination letter to?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I did not hear you.
Who was the termination letter sent?
Your Honor, did you hear?
To whom was the termination letter sent?
To whom? It was sent to Mr. Heverly and to One-to-One Communications, I believe. It is an exhibit that we attached in our supplemental appendix, or is attached in the short appendix by the appellants. It's dated March 1, 2007.
Counsel, there was a mention in the record about a statement made by Open First that it was a subcontractor.
Sure.
Of Mr. Heverly or One-to-One, and I believe was in response to maybe an RFP or was part of the due diligence. Could you talk about that?
Sure, I'm happy to. What you're referring to, I believe, Your Honor, is a statement made in their brief about a letter Mr. Kraft sent, kind of outlining the proposed terms of relationship, where he happens to use the word subcontractor in one paragraph. Okay. That, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that is, in essence, what their appeal is about. They took that snippet out of that one letter, their version of the facts, that nugget that belongs over here, and said, look at that, we should win. In that record, however, is Mr. Kraft's testimony that that's not what he meant by subcontract, and more to the point, the RFPs that Mr. Heverly, the testimony was helping prepare, where they're representing to customers there is no subcontracting relationship. coupled with the customer's testimony that they believed they were dealing with one entity. That subcontractor dispute, if you will, Your Honor, is the classic factual dispute. And I'm very glad it came up here, because that's precisely what was put in front of the jury. They went before the jury and said, look, I have a letter that says subcontractor in one paragraph in 2002 or 2003, I believe that letter is. We went in front of them and said, look at all this other evidence. It's clear no matter what Mr. Kraft said in that letter, that's not what this relationship was, as represented by Mr. Heverly as an agent in an RFP in which we signed off on there were no subcontracting relationships involved in the production of these billing statements. If I can, I'll move on to address some issues on our cross-appeal.
Well, yeah, that if you're going to do that, because it's curious that I guess in the jury also found that your company had withheld $400,000 worth of commissions.
Right.
Whether that was supposed to be an offset or that was a punishment or whatever, they then award $1 million punitive damages.
Right.
And I'd like you just to discuss that.
Surely. And what I really would like to focus on, if I can, is the punitive damage aspect.
Right.
Because that, to me, is the one place where I said there was an exception earlier, that this court has shown, I think, a willingness, and justifiably so, to take a harder look at a jury's awarding of punitive damages versus other awards. And we cited in our case it's Guile or Gile case, G-I-L-E, in which this court, in a discrimination case, essentially said some employees of United Airlines had not accommodated somebody and should have known better and really should have done it. However, it appeared that that didn't rise to the level of such a bad faith intent as to warrant a punitive damage award. Now, each side got punitive damages here, and we're not going to be inconsistent. The same standard that we cited to you applies under Wisconsin law. But here's the difference. The only evidence in the record is that commission payments were suspended to Mr. Heverly and his company after discovering that fraud, the phone ring in early February of 2007. Nothing else. And I posit to you, in that one area, the jury did go too far under the Giles case and the other rationale this court has expressed. Quad, or Open First at the time, had at least a conditional right to suspend payments to an agent that it discovered was acting dishonestly, not in its best interest, and breaching its agency fiduciary duties to it. Now, is that the case in every case? Probably not, and I will concede to Your Honor that the commission's issue, I won't call it a red herring, but whether you award it on conversion or you step over and you take it as an offset, the commission's come off the damages one way or the other, right? But the punitive damage award in particular, there's no basis for. When you look at the standard under Wisconsin law for punitive damages, I have yet to see a case, and I will stand corrected if there is one, where an employer gets tagged, or in this case a principal gets tagged, for not making payments or suspending payments after discovering this type of intentional and fraudulent behavior. Now, it may be the jury found in its province to say, you know, there's enough of a sliver there where you may have the right to terminate him and go get your damages, but you should have paid him.
What's the standard of proof?
I'm sorry?
On punitive damages.
Sure. It can go down as far as intentional reckless disregard of someone's established right. Okay? And that's where I think that this fell apart. Mr. Heverly in 1-to-1 did not have a right to those commissions, we argue, but the right was certainly in question. And when you look at the snippet of testimony that we gave you from Robert Kraft in the record and in our brief, particularly in our reply brief on our cross appeal, he says point blank that decision was made after we discovered the fraud, and there's no evidence to the contrary. They had been paying up to that point. And it was made because you just don't pay somebody who does that to you. That may be the stuff that compensatory damages are made of, even assuming that he had a right at all, which I don't concede. But it's not the stuff punitive damages are made of. Contrast that with a punitive damages type case where an employer says, you know, or in this case a principal, I don't want that agent working for me anymore. I would like to go get the customers. I'm just going to suspend payments to squeeze him. I don't have any right, don't have any justification, but I'm going to pinch him so he can't go compete in the interim while we go get the customers. There's no evidence of that here. If there were evidence brought out at trial that those commission payments were suspended before the time that they discovered this activity, we may be having a different conversation. That's just not it.
Well, basically, then there's an admission to some extent of that, he earned and we owe the $400,000. But we're withholding that. We don't trust what else might be out there or something or other, as opposed to some kind of a vindictive thing that they would have to prove. Is that the difference?
The admission you're referring to, Your Honor, is the fact that...
Well, the meaning acknowledge that he must have done something to get $400,000 in somebody's... other than his pocket.
Sure. What they did from a business standpoint is continue to accrue the commission payments on the books. And Mr. DuPont from Quad Graphics testified at trial that the reason that's done is you want to accrue and track that so if at the end of the day the dispute comes out some other way, the amount is there to pay. What they're viewing as an admission is a simple accrual of those amounts on the books of Quad Graphics.
These previously earned?
Yes. Some of them, yes. But I would say because of the lag time on this, they would be previously earned commissions in large part.
Renewals that are more...
Yeah, the renewals came later, right. These were... But as I said, the commissions may have been previously accrued, but the suspension of the payments come up after they discover the dishonesty and, frankly, the behavior that goes back to before those commissions were ever due and owing. You know, we've got emails back as far as cited to you in July of 2006... on a Monday when Mr. Heverly is emailing and saying, hey, I got this new Bowling Brook facility, but don't worry, it doesn't change my commitment to you.
Now, these are later discovered, obviously.
I'm sorry?
These are things you later discovered.
Later discovered, but my point is if you're talking about when the commission's accrued versus the suspension of the payments, it's not entirely clear at all that the commissions didn't accrue while he was doing the behavior that the jury found he engaged in. So, and I'm sorry, Your Honor.
There's a statement in the record in... I believe this is one-to-one's reply brief and response. They have a quotation in there that states, in the pertinent part for my question, we are accruing the expense. Best case, we gain 16% to 22% margin pickup. What does that mean?
Right. Mr. Kraft testified to what that meant. And what that means is what I just said. They're accruing the expense on the book. And what Mr. Kraft said is, best case, if the dispute comes out our way, we pick up that much more money. That's what that meant. As part of, but again, I come back to, Your Honor, that suspension of payment, whether the fact is true that Quad picks up more money, obviously if you're not paying, you're getting more money. It comes after this dishonesty by Mr. Heverly and his company were discovered. And that's where I think you walk out of the punitive damages arena.
What about the assertion that Quad was taking checks that were made out to Open First Communications and then redirecting them and depositing them into Quad's bank account?
Surely. I see the red lights on, but I'll answer the question if that's okay. The testimony came out, Quad runs a centralized banking system for all of its subsidiaries, and that included Open First at the time. So the payments that would otherwise be going to Open First are going into Quad's account, and then it's accounted for to Open First, and then Quad would make the payments out. And they did that for rent payments, commission payments, any payments. Quad runs one centralized system for accounting and banking with Quad and all of its subsidiaries. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Mr. Hanrahan, your time has expired, but I will give you a little extra time because I wanted you to discuss your cross-appeal, the issue. We've already heard on the standing and the agency thing, but if you could address your issue on the cross-appeal.
Sure. Thank you very much, Your Honor. I just have a couple of quick...
2 minutes.
Thank you. That's all I need. On the conversion issue, the most critical point, or one of the most critical points to remember, is that the conversion claim was against Quad. The conversion claim wasn't against Open First LLC. One-to-One made a conversion claim against Quad, and the reason for that was that Quad, as Judge Lee has pointed out, deposited checks made payable to Open First Communications, Inc., that's Heverly's company, the predecessor name of Heverly's company, the predecessor to One-to-One Communications. The exhibit, trial exhibit 1200, Your Honor, has four checks attached to it. Those checks were deposited and endorsed and put in a Quad bank account. They were made payable to Heverly's company. Quad took them and deposited them in their own account. And, in fact, two of the checks that are attached to that trial exhibit 1200 were checks that were after the March 1st, 2007 termination, where Open First and Quad said, we're through, we're done, we're terminating the relationship. Two of those checks were in late March 2007 and even April 2007, and they total approximately $380,000. And so at that point, Quad is taking checks made payable to One2One, depositing them in their bank account, and authorization after the March 1st, 2007 letter, One2One said, you're no longer authorized to tender any of our checks. They had given them authorization. They rescinded that authorization. Despite that authorization being rescinded, Quad continued to take the checks, put them in their account, and hold that money. And they were holding...
But he got this $400,000 judgment. What about punitive?
The punitive damages flow directly from that, Your Honor. It's an intentional taking of another's money and holding it. They knew that those were earned. Quad knew that that was money owed to One2One. They knew they didn't have the right to take the money because the checks were payable to One2One. They deposited it in the account and kept it as a bargaining chip.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
This case will be taken under advisement.